Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I am your devil for the day, Dominic Salvia. Mike Crute is still out on vacation, a well-deserved vacation. Happy Friday to us all. It's been a hell of a week. A lot of news, lots of things to talk about today, and I am super excited to talk about them with my dearest friend, Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. Maggie, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Dom. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Are you kidding me? I'm so excited. And you are in great demand, Maggie. So, you also the host of the former show, The Dawn of the Resistance. Lots of folks wondering if you're ever going to, you know, bring that back, Maggie.
Discussions continue.
All right. We will keep our fingers crossed. In the meantime, this is the Dawn of the Devil Resistance show, I guess. We'll figure it out. We got lots to talk about. And of course, you can be part of the conversation. It is Friday. We air the grievances. I got a few, and now you're going to hear about it. But we'll take yours as well at 844-967-2789. Maggie, I know. I think you prep more for this show than I have.
Stop.
I tell you, man, I keep hearing the highlighters going over the sheets.
Oh, yeah. It's like back in the day when I used to try to prep for my show on Saturday mornings.
You got a stack of paper there that would rival James Santel. So, I mean, there's a contest going on right now.
He's got binders of women, though. Yeah. So, love you, Jim.
We're going to obviously get to the Trump news and, of course, Foxy News. But I wanted to start this out locally here. And then we'll tie it into the national stuff. Saw a headline here at Maggie, and it seems like a repeating headline to me.
Yep.
Molly Beck, this is from yesterday at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Assembly leaders violated the law in handling records into lawmakers' sexual harassment, a court rules. Briefly, I'll read on this. Assembly leaders violated the state's public records law in 2019 in their response to media outlets' requests for records tied to a state's lawmaker who was stripped of his committee assignments for sexually harassing an aide, a three-judge panel ruled on Thursday. I bring this up because it seems like, wow, is this the Gableman stuff? It's a continuing saga from these Republicans who, for some reason, one reason or another, do not want to honor open records requests from legitimate news organizations to find out what the hell is going on. And so this is from 2019. This continues, Maggie. What's your sense on this? My understanding, Republicans generally believe that open records is something that's very important, right?
Yep.
You know, a transparent government, a responsive government. But when they're asked to provide them in many of these cases, they don't. And then they get their hands slapped by the judges. Does anything ever come from these, Maggie?
Yeah, it's a real shame. I'm not sure exactly what the rationales are. I mean, they say, at least for the sexual harassment open records related requests, they assert that they're trying to protect victims. Okay. Well, under Wisconsin open records law, there's what's called a balancing test. And the test basically requires the record custodian to weigh, for example, the right of a victim to maintain privacy.
Certainly.
You can redact a name and identifying information.
Absolutely.
With the public's need to know here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there could be any more of an acute need to know if an elected official is abusing his or her power by sexually harassing staffers. That would seem to me to be sort of the highest order of need to know. The other rationale that's been trotted out by assembly leaders, so this is Robin Voss, that's basically calling the shots here.
Republican Speaker Robin Voss.
This particular story happens to be about a former Democratic representative that engaged in the alleged harassment here. But the decision about releasing the records is coming from Assembly leadership. That's Robin Voss. The secondary rationale is that they don't want to have a chilling effect on people that would report. Perhaps we should be worried about having a chilling effect on the people that behave this way.
Right.
Right? Like, isn't that
That's
the chilling
point?
Effect? Right?
Right.
And again, I just, the context here, I don't care who's doing the harassing.
Yeah.
Right? My point is, why do you think that the public doesn't have a right to know that elected officials are abusing their power? You can protect victims by redacting their names and identifying information. And there may be circumstances where even that isn't required. For example, when I have handled open records requests that deal with sensitive information, we will frequently talk to the reporter. I mean, not the news reporter, but the person who has reported the harassment. Are you comfortable? Do you agree to have your name released?
Yeah.
Right? So there are ways to deal with these things, but the idea that records requests should be denied in whole or in substantial part based on this concept that you'll have a chilling effect on people reporting or that you need to protect the victim and that's where the discussion stops is so misconstruing both the whole intent of our open records laws here in Wisconsin and also ignores the fact that you can protect victims in other ways. You can engage with the victim or the person that's reporting the harassment to find out, hey, what do you feel about the release of your name? Because if that victim feels strongly enough, and I'm sure many of them do, they'd say, go ahead and put that out there.
Yeah.
I would rather have the person who's engaging in the behaviors and others that are similarly situated being chilled from, conducting themselves in this way. But this is a long-standing pattern and practice that comes from the Republican-controlled legislature in the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin has, if you go into Chapter 19 and you read our open records law, and I'm speaking of Chapter 19 of the Wisconsin statutes, you can Google it and read it yourself. It begins with a statement of principle at the beginning of the open records law, and it is one of the broadest statements of principle that exist under any state statutes nationwide, and it has the strongest presumption in favor of release of records. And so watching the assembly, what they first did when Walker was in power was they actually limited the applicability of the state's open records laws as it applies to state government and
yes.
specifically the state legislature.
Right. Exempt
which
themselves
is right. Yeah, like
from the open
everybody
records.
Everybody else
request.
Has to tell the truth and turn over the documents except for us. We know that Republicans have routinely flouted this. And it's not just the Gableman hysteria and conspiracy, right? And I think we need to call it a conspiracy, a fraud on the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin that will end up probably clocking in at well over the $1 million mark, maybe even reaching two before
well,
all
we're
is
at
said
$2.5
and done.
Million reporting right,
right?
now. Yes.
I mean, this is crazy. And they're going to continue to appeal this. Like, no, he was... Save that for a second. I just
okay.
want to finish the history here, right? So they changed the law. They have, Gableman has flouted open records law, which he should be well familiar with as a former state Supreme Court justice. But the assembly also in the gerrymandering lawsuits and when press agencies inquired of the assembly to turn over certain correspondence related to their very map drawing, they refused to turn over huge swaths of that as well. So let's just pause, pull back, and look at these three categories of Republicans refusing to be transparent to Wisconsinites. One is people that abuse their power to harass and intimidate their employees. They're refusing to comply with open records about that. That is disgusting enough. The second thing that they refused to comply with the state's strongest open records law in the nation regarding was their manufacturing of predetermined legislative districts guaranteed to give them nearly autocratic control in perpetuity in the state of Wisconsin, thereby flouting the overall intent and will of Wisconsin voters. That's thing two. And then if that wasn't bad enough, they doubled down on that in the wake of the 2020 election, appointed a nutbag who is a crappy lawyer and was a crappy justice and who doesn't, by his own admission, know anything about elections to run a fraud-based investigation, if you can even call it that. I'm going to call it a fraudulent conspiracy on Wisconsin taxpayers, again, to flout the intention of Wisconsin voters. So you have a Republican legislature led by Robin Voss, Scott Fitzgerald and the like, now in the U.S. Congress, that wants to protect those that abuse power and wants to protect the process by which they flout the intent of Wisconsin voters. And they're doing that in straight-up violation of Wisconsin open records law. And somehow this is defensible behavior? No way. No way.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. That's our pal, Maggie Dawn. You can join us today on the phones at 844-967-2789. Gableman. Okay, so if we talk about the open records, he's no longer the special counsel, right? He's long gone. So this is now legacy situations that Speaker Voss is continuing to appeal. He's appealing this because what? He doesn't like the payout, the attorney's fees, even though he himself is paying attorney's fees, or we as a taxpayer.
For the appeal. Right.
Like, higher than the hourly rate for those that won the case for the open records.
Yeah, so he's paying his lawyers more than what the lawyers that are seeking the records are getting paid. Right. But he ends up having to pay both sets of lawyers, because if you lose open records cases in the state of Wisconsin, you have to pay the other side's lawyers. Okay? So, again, how anyone stands behind an argument that Wisconsin taxpayers and voters aren't entitled to Gableman's documents is shocking enough. He destroyed documents intentionally. You cannot do that in government in the state of Wisconsin. I advise my clients all the time, do not destroy any records. Just don't do it. I don't care if you've got notepads full of stuff. Don't destroy the records. We can deal with them. And then he's doubling down on the appeal. It's just, it boggles the mind at some level. If you just forget which party's which, just think about what it is and what their argument is, that we're not entitled to those documents. And I see no basis for it.
So the next time I hear a Republican talk about transparent and honest government, or the next time I hear a Republican talk about fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, they're lying.
They're lying.
Yeah, it's just a lie. If you cared about those things, you would have released the Gableman records. If you cared about these things, you wouldn't try to hide the bad behavior of sexual harassers. If you cared about transparency and fiscal responsibility, you wouldn't try to hide how you've created the maps. If there's no there, turn the stuff over.
Maggie Dawn, the friend of the devil for the day. You can join us on the phones, 844-967-2789. We've got a big election coming up. Dan Kelly, Judge Janet Protasiewicz. We want to talk about that a little bit when we come back, folks. Stick around.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
We are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's the 420 break. I want to give a quick shout out to my pal, Jim, turning 72 today. Happy birthday, Jim. My understanding, he's going to be 420 and up right about now, so save one for me,
all
man.
Right.
I mean, God, how old am I getting? Well, I got friends that are 72 years old, man. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I got them all across the age spectrum. Young to old. If you think well, I will hang with you.
Right on, sister.
Even if you disagree with me, if you think well.
Yep.
The point is the thinking, right?
Good point. 844-967-2789. Let's talk about these Republicans that maybe don't think too well. Dan Kelly.
Or at all.
Dan Kelly. Now, I wanted to, since this came out, Meg, I've been dying to get your take on it. Dan Kelly on the payroll for the Wisconsin GOP and the RNC to the tune of like $120,000. He was still cashing those checks when he declared his candidacy for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. A position that he was appointed to, not elected to, and then got his ass whooped when he came up for election that time. And it's not just, working. Guys got to work. I understand that. But specifically, he was apparently advising on the fraudulent elector scheme,
right,
for the Wisconsin GOP and the RNC. Counselor, what are your thoughts on that? He apparently won't tell us anything about it because of attorney-client privilege. But he was part of that. How do we find out what he did and how it applies.
Yeah, crime fraud exception. You do not get to conspire with your clients to commit, you know, violent overthrow of the government and treason, which is what that was. I think the fact that Judge Protasiewicz came out and unequivocally said, I'll recuse if the Democratic Party of Wisconsin shows up as a party in a lawsuit if I'm elected to the Supreme Court. And Dan Kelly did what we all knew that he would do and said, I'll look at it on a case-by-case basis. What? You just worked for these people and they paid you. They're just buying ad time for Janet and like the Republican Party and the E-lines, they're buying ad time for you. So the exactly precise analogy to what Judge Janet has said, I'll clearly recuse myself, no questions asked. Dan Kelly won't that make that same promise to Wisconsin voters that he will put faith in the integrity of the judicial system and fairness above his personal political interests. Again, I don't know how you can vote for this person in good conscience. He told us that he is a partisan and will follow partisan expectations as a justice because he said during the primary that part out loud. He said, you can't vote for Jennifer Doerr because she'll turn into another Hagedorn and don't worry, I won't do that. And by that he means a judge that will follow his conscience and the law to reach decisions. What he's saying is don't vote for Doro because she won't do everything that the Republican Party wants when cases are brought before the court. And now he won't even match the promise that his competitor has made to recuse himself. And he made money from the very party, both national and state, engaged in treasonous plots to interrupt the legal transfer of power. Okay. Why is this guy not being brought before the Office of Lawyer Regulation, which would, you know, if they actually sanctioned him and maybe, you know, suspended his license for a while, might make him ineligible to serve on the Supreme Court. You could actually imagine a circumstance so absurd that if, I mean, heaven help us, if there is such a thing, Dan Kelly were to beat Janet Protasiewicz, he could be sitting on the court and facing an OLR inquiry, and who decides the ultimate OLR? Like, because they can recommend whatever sanctions, but then the person who's sanctioned, the lawyer that's sanctioned, gets to appeal it, and guess where it goes? The Supreme Court.
Right.
You think Dan Kelly would recuse himself from his own OLR sanction hearing? I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, if he can get paid from the old GOP and the RNC and not like recuse himself ASAP from that case, I don't think he's copacetic, right? That's not above board. That's a guy who'll trade his soul to get elected and to further his own personal religious and political agenda. Because he went to, you know, that really top tier law school.
Top tier. Christian Broadcasting Network School of Law.
Right.
I might have maybe been able to get into that one. Maybe.
Oh, you would have been able to do much better than
yes,
that.
Yes, all right. We just got a couple minutes left in this segment. Maggie Dawn, our guest today. It's not only, you know, so the work thing and the influence thing. It's also, like, literally he has a track record. We talked to Dan Lenz recently from Law Forward, and they put together a list. And you were talking about these other conservatives on the court. Like, they didn't agree with them all these times, or they wrote their own opinion because they want anything to do with the crap that Kelly is putting out there. What was your thought on the critique of Dan Kelly by the other conservatives on the court?
Well, I think that's really says more than perhaps any conservative would give you or I credit for. When your own team is saying you're far too compromised to be able to do this job with any level of public trust, which is, I mean, as a government official, I hold my job in public trust. It is not about me. And if I lose the trust and faith of either my clients or the public in doing that job, and I've been subject to some criticism that's been public, I will resign my position, right? If I'm so compromised that people think that I can't fulfill the duties of my job objectively and to the betterment of Milwaukee County, I'm gone.
Yeah, but he doesn't. You know, he actually tries, and his process, his thinking is flawed. You know, that's why these other conservatives are writing their own briefs, because they're like, I can't sign off on what Dan Kelly.
So one of the things that I like to always check myself is, am I humble enough to actually look at this from a completely different perspective and entertain the question, what if I'm wrong? And the problem with people like Dan Kelly and his ilk is that they've so wrapped up their view of the world and his judicial philosophy with their religion, which they possibly cannot ever challenge, right? Because it would fundamentally alter their whole understanding of themselves and their place in this world. He will never entertain the thought, what if I'm wrong? That is exactly the opposite thing that you need in a Supreme Court justice. We need humble people who will follow the law, not their own religious beliefs, and certainly not the people that have bought and paid for them.
Dan Kelly, strong and wrong. Of course, very serious issues to address. Let's talk about the abortion on the other side of this break. You can join us, 844-967-2789.
Is a complete lack of respect for the law.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Happy Friday to us all. You can join us on the lines, air your grievances, contribute to the conversation, 844-967-2789. Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, friend of the Devil's Advocates, host of Dawn of the Resistance.
former host.
A Wisconsin Broadcasters Association champion.
Well, if you insist.
Can't believe we took
still
second.
Hurts, doesn't it?
A little bit. But there's a reason for me, because you are awesome, and I wanted to get your sense. We talked about, of course, this very important Wisconsin Supreme Court race, Dan Kelly, Jenna Protasiewicz, abortion, big issues, right? Still
right.
driving
right.
the conversation, not only in the state, but certainly in the country. And I've seen some testimony that's very unsettling about what some women had to go through. I believe it was in Texas.
Yes.
Before they could actually get the surgery to basically save their lives. I know you got the details on it, Maggie. Why don't you share with the audience?
Sure. So just this past week, five women, residents of the state of Texas, along with two Texas physicians, obstetrics physicians, filed suit to try to challenge Texas's abortion law. So let's just put a pin in it, and I want to explain, before we get to these women's individual experiences, I want to just take a moment to explain, like, wait a minute, people might be thinking, didn't the Supreme Court just say that states can ban abortion? So how could they be challenging this abortion ban in Texas?
It's a great question, Megan.
Right? So you still have to write laws that are sufficiently clear so that people can understand what conduct is permitted and not permitted.
So I'll pause right there.
Yep.
In Wisconsin, we already had a law on the book that was now referred to. Did Texas have something similar?
Yeah, they did have what's called basically a trigger ban that went into effect as soon as the Dobbs decision itself basically took effect. There was a couple of more days for some technicalities, which aren't relevant for our discussion
sure.
now. But their ban does not date back to before women had the right to vote.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, way to go, Texas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they had actually crafted a ban in anticipation.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yep.
Of the Dobbs decision. One has to wonder, might someone have leaked some information to Texas?
Who would have possibly done something like that? I know they're looking into it, Maggie. I'm looking forward to hearing what that report ends up showing.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. Just to engage in this tangent for a second, because it is so important. There's been an allegation made by a former conservative, big right winger, who sort of ended up in the same circles with Samuel Alito. Why was he able to do that? Because the Supreme Court set up a slush fund to like fund their library and stuff, and basically conservative donors use that to gain access to the court. This guy's claiming that Alito basically dropped the hint, let them know what was coming on Dobbs. So that's a whole nother show, Don. Ethics for judges?
Expand the court.
Yeah, right. Term limits. But to return. So
yes.
Texas enacted a law to ban abortion in anticipation of Dobbs. Its language is bad.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Laws, in order to be enforceable, have to be not vague, right? And so claims can be made that a law is effectively void for vagueness because it inhibits people's choices and behaviors in a way that may reach well beyond what the law is actually meant to prohibit. Of course, you also have this weirdness in Texas where they've incentivized others to effectively enforce the law. There's lots of weird stuff baked
into
the...
civilians can bring complaints against other civilians for violating this law and collect like a reward.
Yes. They've monetarily incented neighbors to rat out neighbors, brothers to rat out sisters, mothers to rat out daughters. It's a lovely place, that Texas. Second probably only to none, but maybe second to Florida. Again, another topic right, for another day.
So much to talk about.
I know, right? Mike, stay on vacation. I kid. So there's lots of things that are problematic about the particularities of Texas's law. And so this lawsuit is challenging it on a number of those bases. One, that it is void for vagueness. And part of the way that you would articulate those arguments is by laying out the circumstances of women who ended up in, frankly, life-threatening circumstances because their physicians and other healthcare professionals had no idea what exactly was prohibited and what wasn't. The way that this is talked about colloquially is often like fetal heartbeat, like the heartbeat rule. You have to, if there's a heartbeat, you can't do an abortion. Well, what's an abortion? Well, there's a whole bunch of different procedures that maybe are considered abortion. A lot of laws just define it as bringing a fetus's life to an end. Again, you can see where this gets really messy. And sure. So while it is one thing to talk about the fact that this puts women's lives at risk, it's another to see it written out in a legal filing, which again dropped on March 6th at 6:30 p.m. In Travis County, Texas. And the five women, Amanda, and they've agreed to have their names in this. I'm not sort of talking out of turn. It's Amanda Zerwiski, Lauren Miller, Lauren Hall, Anna Zargarian, and Ashley Brandt. And I'll send this to your producer so he can post it on your website.
Yeah,
so
please
people
do.
And I encourage people, even those who are staunchly pro-life, to pick this up and to read it, okay? And to read what has happened to some of these women. And then I want you to think, how do I craft a law if you read this and you say, clearly those women should have been able to access health care.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Should have been able to terminate a pregnancy. How do you write the law to make sure that it's like the right people that can get an abortion? And this is how you start to know that laws are stupid, okay? Is when you start to try to think about how to word it and the different factual scenarios that can come up. And I promise you, you try to word these bans differently, the next lawsuit like this one will be filed with just as egregious facts where women are forced into decisions where their healthcare professionals are giving them the freaking silent treatment, which you hear in all five of these stories. They are left alone, crying, and in danger of their lives with no one advising them about what they can do. Okay.
What no a matter- terrible circumstance to possibly be in.
Correct. And this is about protecting life.
Right.
So I urge you to read their stories. We'll talk about them a bit because I think it's important to say these things out loud. But I challenge you to think about how do you so carefully circumscribe a law? Rape, incest, or the life of the mother? Well, the life of the mother when? Like before she gets septic or after and she's actually in the process of dying? Well, what if they're twins and one fetus is going to die and if that fetus isn't aborted, it might kill the mother and the other? Like...
It's a flow chart. It's a Texas flow
right?
chart. Yes, yes.
These are the sorts of things that indicate so strongly, if you have any legal integrity or moral integrity for that matter, that this is an area that is beyond government regulation because it is so rife with gray area, right? So I felt compelled during this week of International Women's Day to share a bit of these women's stories with our listeners. And again, I'll send over the PDF. I'm sure you guys can get up for Monday at least.
Yeah, folks,
so that people can read it if they wish.
You're listening to The Devil's Advocates. That is Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, joining me as co-devil. Let's get to some of the terrible details, if you would please, Maggie.
Yeah. And again, I don't mean to share these things out of purian interest or shock value, but I think it's really important for people to confront what these abortion restrictions and bans actually do in practice.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about, taking these arguments like out of the theoretical and frankly out of churches and into science-based reality and healthcare realities for women, their partners, and fetuses, frankly, and the doctors that have to serve in this quagmire of unclear laws that have very little practical meaning. So the first plaintiff, her name is Amanda, Zorowski, I think, and she's 35. She, her and her husband have known each other since preschool, which I thought was an interesting fact that they included. Married in 2019. They've been trying to have children since they got married. She went through a year and a half of fertility treatments. For those of you who struggle with fertility, it can be a painful, extraordinarily expensive road, which, by the way, I don't know why insurance isn't forced to cover fertility treatments, but again, topic number three for the next show, right? Her pregnancy proceeded without incident until at 17 weeks. Again, that's after the 15-week ban, which is sort of the oft-cited construction. Sometimes they go back to at least 12 weeks.
So regardless of the other language in Texas, it's a 15-week ban.
Correct. Okay. So she's just over the 15. So she's at 17 weeks, 6 days. She was diagnosed with an incompetent cervix, which is a weakening of cervical tissue that causes premature dilation, which can lead to way, way, way early childbirth. Because her pregnancy was still so many weeks before viability, she was told that her baby would not survive. She kept asking if there was anything that her doctors could do. She specifically asked if she was a candidate for cerclage, a procedure where a patient's cervix is stitched closed to prevent preterm birth. Her doctors told her that, unfortunately, her membranes were already prolapsing. And they go on. They basically describe a bit of the extraordinary measures that she and her husband went through to try to save this pregnancy. However, her water eventually broke. Again, this is well before fetal viability.
Yeah.
Out of the womb, right? Amanda returned to the ER that night, diagnosed with preterm, pre-labor rupture of membranes, or PROM, is P-P-R-O-M is what that's referred to. Because her amniotic fluid had entirely drained when her water broke, the emergency room kept her overnight in the hopes that she would go into labor on her own, because then when the baby would be born dead, we're fine. I just want to be clear about that. In the morning, however, she had not gone into labor. Her baby still had cardiac activity, and her vitals were still stable. And the reason that I say that her baby would have been born dead is that as soon as the baby is detached because of the character of the uterus and everything, that's the baby would die during birth. So she wakes up in the morning. Her baby still has some cardiac activity, and the mother's vitals were stable, meaning she was not yet showing signs of infection or labor actually starting to occur. She was told that the hospital could provide no other care at this point in time under the Texas abortion ban. That means every single healthcare provider in the room knows your baby's going to be dead, and we're just waiting either until you start childbirth and they won't induce, or you start to turn septic and get infected, and now you're at risk of dying and we can abort the fetus.
Then we can finally do something.
Yep. But until then,
we know it's going to happen. Yes. We know that certain things are going to happen.
Only two options,
but until
basically.
They actually happen.
Yeah, we can't do anything and we can't really tell you anything. Before the ban, she would have been offered an abortion or transferred to a facility that could offer the procedure. She was offered neither, okay, because the hospital was concerned about the ban. She was told that delivery could take hours, days, or weeks. She would have the choice.
Weeks.
So she could either stay in the hospital in case she starts to turn septic immediately. They could save her life. Because if you turn septic and you're hours away from hospital, you're dead, right? So she has no idea how long it's going to take. She decided then that it was time to travel to another state for an abortion. She looked it up. The closest abortion provider to drive was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's 11 hours of a drive. The specialist at the hospital urged Amanda to stay within a 15-minute drive of the hospital in case her health deteriorated quickly. On Wednesday morning, Amanda was sent home with instructions to monitor herself for sign of infection. She spent the next 2 days at home grieving her inevitable loss of her baby and worrying about her health. On Thursday morning, during this whole thing, the trigger ban actually went into effect. So before the ban actually went into effect, she still couldn't get the health care that she needed because they were so afraid. The providers were so afraid. She went for a checkup the next day. Her vitals were stable. She's on her way home from the doctor's office. She started to develop chills and shivering. By the time she got home, she had a temperature of 101 degrees, and she could not verbally respond to her husband's questions. She's septic now. She called, or her husband calls the OB, and while he's waiting for a callback, he decides he can't wait any longer, takes her to the ER. When she gets to the ER, Amanda has a temperature of 102 degrees. It ends up peaking at 103.2.
Wow.
She's confirmed to be septic. She's put on antibiotics. The hospital, the healthcare team, finally agreed that she was sick enough that they wouldn't and couldn't induce labor, and that inducing labor to then effectively abort the fetus would not violate the law because her life was finally enough at risk.
Oh,
it was enough at risk. So she actually gave birth to her baby, and the baby passed away. I'm going to tell you the rest of Amanda's story when we get back after break, because we need to hear this.
We'll be right back.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. We'll get to them today at 844-967-2789. In the meantime, our pal here, Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counselor, going through some of these just devastating stories about what women experiences in Texas and having to literally go through sepsis and life-threatening behavior activities until before Texas law would allow the medical community to address the very dangerous issues. Maggie, please continue.
Yeah, so we had gotten to the place where Amanda had become, was denied, frankly, just denied the health care that her and, frankly, her fetus deserved, right? Until she became septic and nonverbal and had to be rushed to the hospital. She had a fever that peaked around over 103 degrees. Her baby was born effectively dead, still born. So that night, she's trying to recover from all of this, including the emotional devastation. I mean,
right.
Can you imagine,
no.
Like, your baby's not going to make it, and you have to deal with that. And then on top of that,
you might
for
not
Amanda,
make it.
Yes, for days, she went through this agony. So she's now in the hospital trying to process all of this. Her blood and platelet levels were really low. So it looked like that first septic or whatever other infection had passed, but there were still some weird biometric indicators. So she stays there. And then that evening, she basically develops a second infection, also becomes septic, and she ends up in the ICU. I mean, So now she's basically near death for the second time. In total, she was in the ICU for 3 days. And of course, her family had to fly in apparently they were from one of the coasts, had to fly in. Her family was there because they thought she was going to die. And this death would have been because Texas decided that it's more important for mostly white, rich, old men of a particular religious persuasion to tell all women in Texas what's good for them in all circumstances. She eventually recovers and returns home. That's the only reason that she's in this complaint, mind you. I have to point that out, Dom. It's so important because if the women who died because, and they have, there have to be women who have died in Texas and probably Wisconsin, but they can't give their permission to become a plaintiff. So the only stories you'll ever hear in these lawsuits, people, will be the women that survived. You won't hear from the dead ones. So she eventually came home, but what had happened to her body was so extreme from the infections, and that this means her reproductive tract, her reproductive organs were infected.
Right.
The scar tissue was so extreme in her uterus and on her fallopian tubes that she couldn't get an X-ray of her reproductive organs. Like, that's how extensive the scarring was. And so she underwent a surgery to try to attempt to remove some of the scar tissue. And while her physicians were able to clear her uterus and one fallopian tube, the other fallopian tube is so scarred that it is permanently closed. And now she's begun IVF treatments again. Okay? There are four other stories in this complaint and the stories from two physicians and what they've seen their patients going through. And I want to emphasize again, the only women that you will hear from in these lawsuits are the ones that lived. So it challenges me on a really baseline level that this debate has gotten so reductivist, right? And it's, you're either a good Christian or you're a terrible sinner who wants to promote rampant sex. Oh, no, wait, that's Dan Kelly that thinks that that's what women's healthcare choice is about. And by the way, Dan, if I don't believe the same crap you do, maybe rampant sex is just fine where I come from, because I thought our laws were about freedom of choice. Except when those choices are things like guns. We can't do that.
No.
But we can deny women health care. I don't know about you, but that's like a bridge too far for
me. And this situation, thank you for highlighting a very important point, Maggie Dawn, that the dead tell no tales. You know what I'm saying? There's no testimony. You're not going to hear the specifics and the agony of not just someone who was gone through that, had the infection and came out of it, but went the next step, didn't make it.
Right.
What was going through their head?
Right.
God, I wish I lived in California. You know what I mean? Because this is all entirely preventable. The medical community could step up and absolutely handle the situation. And if it means an abortion, then it means an abortion. And she can go and her family can go and try again. They wanted kids.
Yes.
They want to do this, and she's going through fertility again after all of this.
Yep.
That is just stunning.
It really is. And again, let's just remember here, Ron Johnson's solution is women just move somewhere else. That was Ron Johnson's
response.
It'll
get a little messy for a minute, but you know, then they can just leave if they don't like it. Yeah.
Just leave. I explaining this or saying that this is that these bans that are worded in a way that make it impossible to understand what is prohibited and what is not. And by the way, you can never word this ban carefully enough. That is what tells you that you have to let people in consultation with their own religious leaders, their own family, and their own doctors make these decisions. I don't know how you look at these cases like this and say, I got no problem with that. My religion requires me to let women die, to let twins, paired fetuses, let one of the babies die. I don't get it. And by the way, two of the stories in this complaint are women with twins, where basically one of the twins was certain to die, that fetus was certain to die, and they ended up in, again, situations where they were septic and it risked the life of the twin that was viable, the twin that could survive.
Right.
So I just don't think the moral argument holds up under scrutiny. And I think this case, you know, and there's thousands of these stories, right? So I challenge people that say, this is what my religion requires. Really? Is it? I don't know about that God. I don't know about that God.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That is my guest devil of the day, Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. We're going to come back after this break. We're going to take some of your calls at 844-967-2789. Judge Janet Protasiewicz has come out and says she's pro-choice. I mean, she's made very clear on that. Dan Kelly thinks that all you whores just want to have abortions so you can have sex.
Yes.
Because, you know, all you need is an aspirin.
Which, P.S., I bet he thinks the same thing about contraception and sex education. What might Dan Kelly ban next?
We don't want to find out.
No, we do not
want to find out. Maggie, thank you for that. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We're going to come back, take more of your calls, and, of course, get to the Fox News, the Trumpy stuff.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll kick it up.
Yeah, so we're going to bring it the happier happy hour. Star Sex, we promise. Stick around. We'll be right back.